Welcome to part two of the 2008-09 AATP 11D podcast. Part one was about getting ready for submission and making sure that we know what is required and where we obtain all the information that we need. In this part, I want to go into the detail of how to calculate and report the expense payments and benefits to be included on the 2008-09 P11Ds and, where relevant, Forms P9D. The starting point is the basic rule that the cash equivalent or value of the item to be reported is normally the cost to the employer or to any other third-party provider. We then have the exceptions to the basic rules because of specific legislation, and this covers live-in accommodation, vouchers, car and fuel benefit charges, and company vans. The details to be shown on the P11D include the full cost and any amount made good by the employee or from which income tax was deducted under pay-as-you-earn. The taxable benefit and the amount liable to Class 1 NICs if included in a brown box on the P11D is the net cash equivalent. Where an employee does pay anything towards the cost of the benefit provided, the timescale for making good should be reasonably short, if it's not immediate, through pay. HMRC guidance on making good car fuel in its Employment Income Manual, for example, says the following. In many instances, the making good required by the Employment Income Manual at 23780 is completed by the end of the tax year. But you will find cases where making good does not occur until after the end of the tax year. This may be where mileage records and repayments in the final months of the year take a little time to process. You can accept this as meeting the terms of the legislation, provided final settlement is made without reasonable delay. So let's remember that, without reasonable delay. One very important point to remember is that all expense payments and benefits in kind must be reported on a VAT-inclusive basis, irrespective of any amount that may have been recovered by the employer. The information reported on the P11Ds must be reported on a tax year end basis, so 6th of April to the 5th of April, or perhaps to the 31st of March if that's the accounting period. It cannot be based on accounting periods for most companies, which could be anywhere from the end of April through to the end of February, perhaps. Next, I want to look at the individual sections on the P11D and at what exactly has to be reported. The first section is Section A, and this covers any assets transferred to an employee or director, including perhaps company cars, any property, goods, or other assets which are transferred to an employee. Here we are required to report the market value of any company asset transferred at the date of the transfer of the asset. This general rule applies if the asset sold or transferred was a car or any other asset that had never been provided as a benefit in kind, for example, second-hand office furniture. However, if the asset transferred was previously available to the employee as a benefit in kind, the cash equivalent then becomes the higher of the market value of the asset at the date of transfer, or the cost or market value of the asset when it was first supplied for benefit purposes. We can, however, deduct any sums already taxed on the use of the asset. We need to differentiate between goods purchased by the employer and any goods that might be manufactured by the employer. The cost to be reported for goods that are purchased by the employer would be the price paid for the goods, and if there was any add-on costs incurred in providing the goods to the employee, that would also be added to the actual cost. In contrast, we have to use the marginal cost of production, most often taken to be the wholesale price, where the goods are manufactured by the employer. That excludes any profit element, which would otherwise be reflected in perhaps a substantially higher retail price. Awards of readily convertible assets are not reportable on Form P11D, and they attract pay-as-you-earn and Class 1 NICs. The next section is Section B, which deals with payments made on behalf of the employee. Here we have to report details of any payments made by the employer on behalf of the employee. For example, the settlement of the employee's home telephone bill or a credit card bill, or any school fees paid by the employer that was discussed in the first part of the PLMD podcast. Also included here will be the amount of any tax deductible on notional payments which was not immediately borne by the director or employee and then not made good within the statutory 90-day period. This is a problem that can occur where a director or employee receives share option benefits and doesn't have sufficient salary to allow the employer to recover the tax that's due and has to be paid over to HMRC. Pay-as-you-earn should have been applied to any employment income provided in the form of a cash voucher or readily convertible asset or vouchers and credit tokens used to acquire such assets or if they are readily convertible themselves. Let's move on. Section C, which is vouchers and credit cards. Here we have to report any expense incurred in the provision of vouchers, including season tickets, which are capable of being exchanged for money, goods or services. And again, any additional expenses incurred in providing the benefit. So we have to give details of all expenses and other payments made, but not those made in connection with cars, which are covered by the scale charge. We can exclude the value of any vouchers in which pay-as-you-earn has been operated, and this might be luncheon vouchers, where the excess over the 15 pence a day exempt amount is put through the payroll. Remember that vouchers are liable to Class 1 national insurance contributions unless they're exempt, and therefore that Class 1 should have been paid by the 19th of April statutory deadline, otherwise an interest charge is running at this time. We do not have to report the first £55 per week of any qualifying childcare vouchers provided by the employer, and therefore we only have to report any excess. So if an employer was to give £100 a week in childcare vouchers, we would be reporting the £45 a week, not the £100. We move on to one of the difficult areas for reporting, and that's living accommodation. The provision of living accommodation is a taxable benefit on all employees, not just P11D employees, so that's regardless of what they earn. It is reportable on the form P9D as well. This is where the P11D working sheet number 1 provided by HMRC can be quite useful to help us calculate the cash equivalent of the benefit. This again is one of those benefits that's not based on the cost basis of charge. We have two types of charge for living accommodation. The basic charge is based on the greater of the annual gross rateable value of the property, or indeed the rent paid by the employer. And from that, we deduct any rent paid by the employee. The benefit can be prorated if the accommodation is only available for part of the year. We then have a second charge, what's called the additional charge, which arises on property costing more than £75,000. And of course, that limit's been there for a long time, and £75,000 is not much for a property nowadays. We also have to take into account the cost of any improvements to the property measured from the next tax year after the expenditure was incurred. The additional charge will not apply if the basic charge is already based on the open market rental value. The excess over £75,000 is converted into an annual rent by multiplying that excess figure by the official rate of interest at the beginning of the tax year. Now, for 2008-09, the tax year started off with an interest rate of 6.25%. If we had a property which cost £375,000, take off the excess of £75,000 and charge £300,000 at 6.25%, we'd have a benefit to be reported of £18,750. As I've already said, use the working sheet and that will help you get through it. The value of any exempt accommodation doesn't have to be reported, and to be exempt it has to be job related, such as a house or flat occupied by, say, a caretaker of a school, policeman in a police house. The exemption applies if it is necessary for the proper performance of the employee's duties that he or she should reside in the accommodation. Another exemption is where the property is provided for the better performance of the duties and here it has to be customary in the industry for employers to provide accommodation. The final exemption is where there's a special threat to the employee's security, and it's only the security exemption that can apply to a director of a company. But one very important point on P11D reporting where live-in accommodation is involved is the question of other reportable benefits. Even if a property is exempt because it's job-related accommodation, there may be other P11D reporting requirements in respect of any cost of light and heating met by the employer, costs of repairs and decorations, if they're costs that would normally be met by the employee or the tenant, if the employer provides furniture, there would be the use of asset tax charge based on 20%. So these additional benefits need to be taken into account if you've got any live-in accommodation to be reported on the P11D. The next section on the P11D is Section E, and this covers mileage allowance payments and passenger payments. We do have a working sheet, number 6, which can help us with this, but it's fairly straightforward. We have to report the excess over and above the authorised mileage rates. Now, I'm sure most of the listeners will know that the authorised mileage rates are 40p per mile for the first 10,000 business miles and 25p a mile for any business mile after 10,000 miles. If an employer were to be paying 25 pence a mile for every business mile, there could be nothing to report because there'd be no excess. In contrast, if an employer was to pay 50 pence a mile for business mileage and an employee's own car, then for the first 10,000 miles, there'd be an excess of 10p a mile that had to be reported. And for any mileage over 10,000, there'd be an excess of 25 pence to be reported. Again, you can use the working sheet to help you with that. Passenger payments also included here, but the fact is that not many employers pay allowances to their employees for passengers travelling in the car. If they are paid, then the passenger payments will not have to be reported if they're limited to 5p per mile per passenger and providing its necessary business mileage. Move on from there, we come to one of the major sections to be completed on a P11D, and one, of course, of the most common benefits. Section F, company cars and company car fuel benefit. Here again, we have a working sheet, number 2. And we have some quite detailed guidance in the booklet 480 in chapters 11, 12, 13 and 15, and also appendix 1. Chapter 11 relates to company cars and to company vans from the 6th of April 2005 when the rules changed. The definition of a car is any mechanically propelled road vehicle except a goods vehicle, and that has to be a vehicle of a construction primarily suited for the conveyance of goods. So, for example, a lorry wouldn't be a company car. Estate cars and off-road recreational vehicles will count as cars. Surprisingly, it may seem, but a minibus would count as a car, not a van. Company car doesn't include a motorcycle or an invalid carriage, or a vehicle of a type not commonly used as a private vehicle. So a company car couldn't be a Grand Prix Formula One car. As I've said, P11D Working Sheet 2 is available to help you calculate the car and fuel benefit. It's interesting to note, if you look at the P11D, it has only room for reporting two company cars, and therefore we'll have to use a separate sheet if there's been a number of cars provided during the year. Employers have to provide details of the cars made available for private use, as well as providing the total car benefit charge. And the car benefit charge is incurred wherever a car is made available for private use. So it's based on availability, not just private usage. Made available without the transfer of the car to the employee, or to a member of the employee's family or household if the car is provided to them by reason of the employment. Where a car is made available for the private use of an employee or a member of the family, it's deemed to be made available by reason of the employment. In other words, it's deemed to go with the job. The one statutory exception to this is where the employer is an individual and it can be shown that the car was provided in the course of ordinary domestic relationships. But HMRC would look to see if the car had been treated as a business asset, and if it had, they'd be looking to tax the benefit of the car. So, calculating the car benefit charge. It's calculated in a series of steps. First of all, we have to find the list price of the car. And then we have to look at the price of any accessories which fall to be taken into account. Accessories provided when the car is first registered would all count. After the car has been registered, if there are accessories added to the car, say for example a tow bar fitted costing £95 after the car had been supplied, the cost of that tow bar wouldn't be counted because it's less than £100. If an expensive tow bar was fitted and it cost say £150, it would be counted unless the tow bar was only provided for business use, say for towing a trailer. We have to make adjustments to the price of the car if there's any capital contributions made by an employee, and there is a limit of £5,000 per annum for capital contributions. The next thing we have to do is find the appropriate percentage for the car using the CO2 chart. So we have the list price, let's say £20,000, CO2 percentage, which can vary between 15% and 35% at the maximum. And then we have some reductions for special fuel cars. For 2008-09, for the first time, we have what's known as the QALEC cars, the qualifying low emission cars. And if you have one of those cars, they have to have CO2s of 120 grams per kilometre or less. You cannot round down, so if it was 124, you would not round down to 120. But if it is 120 or less, the car will be 10% instead of 15%. And if it's a diesel car, it will be 13% instead of 18%. I've mentioned the list price. Well, the price of a car does mean the list price. And if it has one, it is the published list price, inclusive of costs such as accessories, as I mentioned, any relevant taxes, VAT, car tax or customs duties. It excludes the £25 new car registration fee, and it wouldn't include the cost of any petrol in the car when it's first delivered to the employee. If we look at the table in the 480 booklet, we will see where there are reductions in the standard charge for the car. So we have cars such as the hybrid electric car, which is a H car, where there's a reduction of 3%, or we have a bi-fuel car with CO2 emissions, where there's a reduction in the 2%. What you really need to do is to refer to that table when you have the details of the car to see whether there are any reductions from the standard cars. One thing to be careful of for 2008-09 is, do you have any diesel cars which qualify as Euro 4. There used to be a waiver of the 3% supplement for diesel Euro 4 cars, but that doesn't apply except for a car that was registered before the 1st of January 2006. So be a bit careful about that when you're completing the P11Ds this year. One thing to consider is whether there's been any amounts paid by the employee in the year for the private use of the car. If there has, this will reduce the car benefit on a pound-for-pound basis. If an employee was paying £25 a month towards the private use of the vehicle, that would be £300, which would be a reduction in the calculated car benefit for that car. The cash equivalent of each car has to be reported in Box 9 of the 2008-09 P11D. Again, an important check when you're doing P11Ds is to make sure that you've got all of the cars and that no cars have been omitted. If you're not sure about the CO2 emissions, there are a couple of websites that you can refer to. The Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders website will give you details of older cars. The government website for the Vehicle Certification Agency will give you details of new cars. Once you know the CO2 figure, you can refer to the CO2 table, again in the booklet 480. It starts at 135 grams per kilometre, which is the 15% band for 2008-09, and it goes up to any cars with CO2s of 240 grams per kilometre or above, which is 35%. Any diesel car would be 3% more, but not exceeding 35%. Next, I want to look at the provision of private fuel, because this is quite an emotive issue. The cash equivalent of fuel for each car fuel benefit charge has to be reported on the P11D in box 10, and a car fuel benefit charge will apply unless fuel or any mileage allowance was provided solely for business travel, or if, say, an employee was provided with a fuel card or a company credit card and all fuels purchased on that, it is essential that they can prove that they've repaid any private fuel that they've had. Making good can be by a payment to cover the cost of any private fuel, and the revenue also, say, by replacing the fuel used for private motoring. But it is a fact that HMRC will want evidence that all of the fuel has been repaid. A point I put to delegates at the CPD courses all the time is to check the adequacy of the business mileage records. The next section on the P11D is section G, which is company vans. And again, we have a working sheet number 3, which can help. Employers are required to report the cash equivalent of all vans made available for unrestricted private use. And this goes at box 9 on the P11D for the van benefit and at box 10 for the fuel benefit. A van is defined as a mechanically propelled road vehicle which is of a construction primarily suited for the conveyance of goods or burden of any description. And the key point is the design weight does not exceed 3,500 kilograms or 3.5 metric tons. The working sheet tells us that if the van is used mainly for business travel and the only other use is for ordinary commuting, there is no benefit charge. And that's been the case since 2005-06. If that is the case, we would not need to report the benefit on the P11D. The guidance says that other private use can be ignored if it is insignificant. And the only examples they give us is that an employee takes an old mattress or other rubbish to the tip once or twice a year, so we can ignore that. An employee makes a slight detour when on a business journey or on a commuting journey to stop at a newsagent on the way to work, say, or an employee calls at the dentist on the way home. So those are very limited situations where other private use could be ignored. What will not be accepted as insignificant is where an employee uses the van to do the shopping or uses the van to go on holiday, or an employee uses the van outside of work for social activities, so to go to the races or to go to the football or the cricket or what have you. One point I would make in this podcast about vans, because it's frequently a question that's put to me by AAT delegates, is that if an employee is allowed to use the van for a week or 2 weeks to go on holiday, HMRC will not accept that if they pay a rental charge for that van for 1 week or 2 weeks, that the van can be ignored as a benefit in kind provision. They would simply say there's a benefit of £3,000 because the private use is not restricted. And if the employee is paid £100 a week for the private use during the holidays, the £200, £100 or £200 would be deducted from the £3,000 charge. So be careful. The standard charge applies only to vans that are less than 3.5 tons. And the full charge will apply if the van is used as a benefit throughout the year. The benefit can be apportioned if the employee only had the van for part of the year. It can be shared between more than one employee if there's dual use of it. Again, the P11D working sheet will help you do that. I'll move on now to the next section on the P11D, and that's section H, which covers interest-free and low-interest loans, and where again we have a working sheet, which is number 4. The provision of an interest-free loan or a low-interest loan to an employee, that is interest at a rate below the official rate, which was 6.25% at the start of the year, and for which the average for the whole year was 6.1%. PLW Working Sheet 4 will help us calculate the cash equivalent of any interest-free loans. We don't have to report on the PLW details of loans used for a qualifying purpose. And if you want to check what a qualifying purpose is, have a look at Chapter 17 and Appendix 5 of the booklet 480. Employers are required to report the cash equivalent for each non-qualifying loan, and we report them separately except for a close company that elects to treat all non-qualifying loans in the same currency as one loan. I think the key point is that if the total amount outstanding on all non-qualifying loans does not exceed £5,000 at any time in the 2008-09 tax year, then the loans can be disregarded. There would be tax relief on a bridging loan, perhaps, but only if the loan is made as part of a qualifying relocation package. We need to be very careful with directors' loan accounts that become overdrawn. If a director's loan account was overdrawn by more than £5,000, even if it is repaid by the end of the tax year or the end of the accounting period, having exceeded the £5,000 limit, there will be a benefit to be reported on the P11D. I move on from there to Section I of the P11D, which is private medical treatment or insurance. And the provision of private medical treatment or insurance, except in circumstances such as medical insurance for overseas duties, will be a taxable benefit in kind on all P11D employees, but will not be a taxable benefit for any P9D employees. Employers are required to report the cost of any private medical or dental treatment, or indeed any insurance premiums, and the cost of any excess on a medical insurance premium if that cost is met by the employer. Any amount made good by the employee or director should be deducted, and then the net cash equivalent will be reported on the P11D. The cost of medical screening, health screening, that is generally available to all employees, will not be reportable as a benefit in kind. AAT members may remember that just over a year ago, the revenue made some changes by statutory instrument so that from August 2007, there was to be a tax charge unless the benefit was available to all employees. And there was somewhat of a furore about that. Well, on the 10th of December 2008, HMRC announced that legislation will be brought forward to say that the previous non-statutory practice of allowing medical benefits to senior groups would continue. So there'll be no benefit to be reported this year unless it's very restricted in who can have medical benefit. Another benefit which is non-taxable and therefore doesn't have to be reported on the P11D would be the provision of an eye test under the Health and Safety Display Screen Unit Regulations of 1992. So if an employer provides this service, free eye tests, then it's not reportable. The next section on the P11D is Section J, which is for qualifying relocation expenditure. And again, we have a working sheet number 5. Relocation is where somebody moves from one part of a country to another, either to take up a new job, on promotion perhaps, within the same job. The cost of relocating an employee is reported year for qualifying expenditure that exceeds £8,000. Or it could be reported at Section N of the P11D, which I'll come to later, if it's non-qualifying expenditure. P11D Working Sheet 5 is provided to help us calculate the cash equivalent of any reportable relocation expense payments and benefits. It's important to remember that the £8,000 tax relief is not an annual limit, and therefore when we're preparing P11Ds for 2008-09, we need to ask the question about anyone who has been relocated during this year and in previous years where expenditure may have already been built up. typical sort of example is that someone was initially relocated in 2007, and in 2007-08, the costs incurred of their relocation was, shall we say, £6,500. And then in 2008-09, the final costs were incurred of perhaps another £4,800. So we've got a total expenditure of £11,300. Last year, there would have been nothing to report because it was less than £8,000. This year, we would report the excess over £8,000 on the P11D. In other words, the additional £3,300. We are in troubled times at the moment, and it's worth me mentioning to you that whilst there's a time limit which says that the cost must be incurred within 12 months after the end of the year of assessment in which the relocation takes place, I can assure listeners that HMRC will be sympathetic if someone has problems either selling their old home or buying a new one, and therefore there's a need to extend the time limit. My advice, as always, is to seek an extension of the time limit in advance of it expiring, and then we'll get a sympathetic response from HMRC. Moving on, Section K of the P11D refers to services supplied, where we have to report the cost of any services supplied to the employees, either free or at a reduced rate. The cost of any in-house services, such as perhaps tax advice provided to employees of an accountancy firm or legal advice to employees of a law firm, will generally not be taxable unless it can be identifiable that there is a marginal cost of providing that advice. In a legal firm, the cost of conveyance in services would be tax-free, but not the cost of the legal searches. And I suspect that the employer would get the employee to pay for those costs anyway. Next on the P11D is something that we will come across and does cause problems, and that's Section L, which is about assets placed at the employee's disposal. We have a reporting requirement here to report the annual value of the use of the employer's asset. And that annual value is 20% of the market value of the asset when it's first provided as a benefit in kind. And what might we have here? Well, if we've got an expensive painting that's purchased for a director and adorns his living room, that's a benefit in kind to be reported on the P11D. If the painting was in the director's office, the company's premises, then I think we would argue that it's not a benefit in kind. It's simply there for when visitors come, or maybe it will be an investment for the company. Lesser items such as company laptops, fax machines, this type of thing, which may be provided for employees' business use, should not have a reportable benefit if any private use is merely incidental. Some employer-provided assets are exempt from a tax charge where the private use is regarded as significant in the context of its use by the employee in performing the duties. But we need to be careful because that exemption doesn't extend to the use of vehicles, and certainly not to the use of boats and aeroplanes. There is no taxable benefit if an employer provides equipment such as a wheelchair or hearing aids to an employee with a disability when it's provided to enable the employee to take up or retain their work, and where the employee uses the equipment significantly for business purposes. We move on now to Section M, and the heading is Other Items, and it's a bit of a sweep-up section. Section M is the only dual-choice section on the P11D where we have to decide whether to report the expense payment or benefit as a brown box, which would attract Class 1A NIC liability, or a blue box, where I've previously said we need to consider, was there a Class 1 NIC's liability and has that been overlooked? The headings that are covered on the P11D for Section M start off with subscriptions and professional fees. We're not talking about magazine subscriptions that are in the office, trade magazines, that type of thing. They wouldn't be reported here. We would be talking about professionals' fees, AAT, membership fees, institute of directors, that type of thing, should actually be covered by a P11E dispensation and not reported. If the subscriptions or fees are job-related and if they're included in the HMRC published list 3, or indeed if they come within the terms of ITPA 2003 sections 343 and 344, they will not be taxable. But as I say, they should be included on the P11D unless we have a dispensation. We could also report you the cost of leisure club, maybe a golf club or gym subscriptions, because they will be a taxable benefit and need to be reported. If you have a situation where the employer enters into an arrangement, say with a health club, for a corporate subscription, and then employees repay their portion of the subscription, perhaps over a 10 or 12 month period, we potentially have a beneficial loan if the loans exceed £5,000, but it shouldn't be a benefit in kind as far as the provision of the gym facility is concerned, because the employees will be making good the cost of their portion. Dining club subscriptions will normally be taxable unless the inspector was to agree that the payment was made to provide a business entertaining facility, and then they would expect to see that the subscriptions were disallowed as business entertaining. There is a provision year for nursery places, and the provision of a nursery at the workplace or a premises financed and run by the employer is actually exempt and wouldn't be reportable. In other circumstances, the cost met by the employer will be taxable and should be reported year, apportioned as necessary between the number of users. We have a provision for educational assistance to be reported, and what the guidance says is to report the cash equivalent as the value of any scholarship awarded by reason of the parent's employment. We could also report you the cost of any school fees or other educational assistance relating to a director or employee, or indeed to his family or household. The next thing in this section is the non-qualifying relocation benefits, which do not come within Section J, and we report you the cost to the employer or any third-party provider of any non-qualifying relocation benefits. Next, we have loans written off or waived, where we have to report the amount of any loans written off or waived unless they were written off by virtue of the death of the employee. During the payroll end courses, I was pointing out to AAT delegates that where a loan is written off or waived and it's not by virtue of the death of the employee, there is a potential Class 1 NIC liability which would arise also. Finally, within Section M, we have the reporting of income tax paid on behalf of the director. We have to report the amount of any income tax paid to HMRC in 2008-09 that the employer failed to deduct from the remuneration paid to a director. This charge normally applies to income tax borne by the company, such as when HMRC issues a Regulation 80 determination. The final section on the P11D is Section N, and this covers a number of things, and we'll start off with expense payments made to or on behalf of the employee. It covers expense payments and it highlights the need to report expenses made to and those paid on behalf of the employee. And I have to say that most employers should have or should be able to obtain a P11D dispensation to cover the majority of the business expenditure included under this heading. If we look specifically at travel and subsistence payments, which are not included in a general expense allowance, then the amount should be reported year as the cost to the employer. This will include any travel between home and a permanent workplace for UK employments and employments performed wholly outside the UK. But again, we should be looking at the dispensation for genuine business, travel and subsistence. The next heading is one that causes a lot of problems because it doesn't say business entertainment, it doesn't say staff entertainment or working lunches. It just says entertainment. And our first obligation in reporting for 2008-09 is to identify whether or not the employing company is a trading organisation. This will normally confirm that the cost of business entertaining has been disallowed in the company accounts. and excluding reciprocal or social entertaining will then enable the employee to obtain a personal tax deduction. HMRC officers will tend to scrutinise the tax computations and compare them with the information on P11Ds to see if there's any discrepancy. Employees of a non-trading organisation may be asked to prove that the expense was incurred wholly, exclusively and necessarily in the performance of their duties in order to avoid a tax charge. As I've said, the P11D doesn't separately identify business and staff entertaining or working lunches, which are normally treated as a taxable benefit, unless, of course, they're covered by a P11D dispensation. Lunches which are provided as part of job-related training should not be treated as giving rise to a taxable benefit and therefore should not have to be reported. Where employees have lunch when they're working away at a temporary workplace, that cost should be treated as allowable travel and subsistence. Staff entertaining is one of the most popular issues to be picked up by HMRC compliance officers, although many employers tend now to include this expenditure in a PAYE settlement agreement. The cost of food and drink taken at or near the normal place of work, including food for staff working late, meals and drinks when discussing business outside of the office, will be taxable staff entertaining. There's one exception to this, if there's a canteen concession, and so food and drink in the staff canteen wouldn't be taxable, it would be exempt. But it's a problem area where you do have meals and hospitality of any kind, which is for staff only, and it needs to be looked at and decide how to report it on the P11D or whether to include it in a PAY settlement agreement. The next heading on the P11D is general expense allowance for business travel, where we have to report the amount of any round sum allowance, not exclusively for entertaining at box 16, and where they've been taxed with the payroll, the cash equivalent is reduced to nil. If the allowance can genuinely be shown to be business expenditure and that there's no profit element, the Payslip Tax Office should be asked to issue a dispensation to cover it. Payments for use of home telephone are mentioned, and again, we ought to be able to get a dispensation for the business calls, which can be identified and incurred on a home telephone. We will not be able to get a deduction for the cost of any home rental, and there we'll have a liability which will be for income tax and Class 1 NIC if it's the employee's bill that's being paid. Non-qualifying relocation expenses payments, as opposed to the benefits which were included in Section M, or the qualifying expenditure up to the £8,000 limit that was included in Section J. This is where the employer must report any relocation expense payments that don't qualify for tax relief. This might be something like compensation payments for the loss on sale of a property. The next heading is incidental overnight expenses, which was more commonly known as PIES, personal incidental expenses. We are required to report the full cost of any personal incidental overnight expenses if a director or employee incurs more than the statutory exemption limit, which is £5 per night in the UK or £10 per night outside of the UK. It is important to remember that it's only allowable if someone is necessarily staying away from home on business. Finally, I just want to mention a little bit about P9Ds, the form that are not often completed, but form P9D is the return to be used when there are taxable benefits or expenses to be returned for employees who have remuneration at a rate of less than £8,500 per annum. The type of employee most likely to be receiving benefits and expenses will probably be earning more than £8,500 a year to begin with. However, there may be some lower paid employees, such as part-time employees, who still receive some expenses that will need to be reported. What has to be reported for a P9D employee would be non-business expense payments in excess of £25 during 2008-09, non-qualifying relocation expenditure, and amounts of qualifying relocation expenditure in excess of £8,000. Payments liable to Payslip and tax deduction made to employees during the tax year are not returned on Form P14. payments made on behalf of an employee, such as payment of the employee's NICs by the employer, or the payment direct to the telephone company of an employee's home telephone bill. Provision of gifts that the employee could turn into cash could be reportable year for a P9D employee. Anything brought for or paid to the employee other than at market value, such as the provision of the employer's own goods in trade, could be reported year. Any voucher provisions whatsoever have to be reported on the P9D here. Any provisions of credit cards to the employee or a member of their family, but any genuine business expenses could be ignored. Any provision of live-in accommodation, unless it's agreed that it's exempt, would be reported for the employee on the P9D. But then any provision connected to the property, such as light and heat or the use of furniture, may have to be reported here. There will be few cases where P9D returns will be required. P9D employees are not taxed on benefits such as cars, medical insurance and beneficial loans, providing those benefits don't take them above the £8,500 limit. Well, if I finish off as a summary now, P11D and P9D reporting can be quite difficult, and it's certainly quite time consuming if there's more than a handful of employees. Any failure to complete this exercise accurately and on time could prove costly in terms of interest and penalties. The additional work in producing many more P11Ds than perhaps are necessary has a knock-on effect on the directors and employees because of their self-assessment tax returns and perhaps the effect on their tax coding, and this should be avoided. The message is to prepare properly, start early, and to inform employees and directors of the expense payments and benefits that are reportable. But also we need to obtain P11D dispensations to minimise the amount of reporting to the taxable items. This will all help to reduce the errors and the adverse effect on the people that make the money for the employing company. Thank you.